Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm going to be chatting with Harry Silver.
The past 2 years, I've done things that I would interview David Beckham, for example. Like, that is just something that is wild to me and wild to so many people that know me.
I'm interested in what you just said there, because I would have said the opposite, having met you. You said you feel like you can't be yourself when you first meet people.
Sometimes I forget that there's so many people watching and that it's live, because I say some wild things sometimes. I'm just very much myself.
So I do wonder how many people out there had the potential to be at the same level as
so many
pro players, but have just not had that ability to do it along the way.
Yeah. Just because we haven't found out about those people yet doesn't mean that they don't exist, you know? Just because there is definitely a female equivalent to Tens or someone, you know, out there playing on their PC, and they just don't have the reach yet. They don't have...
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. Maybe you've noticed as well, we've been upgrading the audio and the tech slowly over the show so far. Let us know what you think we can improve on next. We're trying to improve the editing style and everything like that. I think we are at that sweet spot now where the tech is perfect. But without further ado, I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Harry beyond the game. I think we're ready.
I'm ready.
You're ready.
I'm ready.
You've been
I'm
ready
excited.
Ever since I met you. You've been bouncing around. Yeah, Harry, welcome to Beyond the Game.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm excited too, because we met in the Among Us era. It seems like most of the people I'm getting on this podcast are Among Us people. But we met back then.
Yeah.
And since then, you've been smashing it with content, with Guild, getting better at presenting. We were just speaking about how much more confident you are in front of camera now. Tell us about what you're doing right now as Harry Silver.
So, as of right now, I feel like I'm doing more than I've ever done before, when it feels like I've been streaming for 5.5 years now. So to me, this feels like the point where people... Sorry, I've hit the microphone.
I think it'll be fine.
To me, this feels like the point where people have like kind of hit their peak and are on the way back down. But at the moment, I feel like I'm busier than ever before. And that could be because I am part of an org, which... I suppose a lot of people in the same space as me maybe might not be, especially as content creators. You know, the amount of content creators actually signed to orgs and doing stuff with those orgs is probably a lot less. It's not that many people, especially in the UK. Like in the UK, the presence is not that high. And also having a manager, which is not something a lot of people have either, that is constantly kind of got my back all the time, helping me grow, thinking of ways we can do this and that, bringing me sponsorships, things that honestly just keep me full-time streaming and full-time content creating. So yeah, I'm busier than ever. It's my first time in my life I've had to use a calendar and actually check it. When people ask me if I can do something, I say, okay, let me check my calendar, which has never happened to me before.
Yeah, I managed to catch you while you're over at Guild HQ,
yes,
which is not too far from here, so
yeah,
you didn't have to travel too far to come out to the podcast.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
you're doing all these different things, but the streaming is the centerpiece. That's where you started, that's the thing you keep consistent. What kind of a streamer would you describe yourself as?
Definitely variety now. Back in the day, I didn't used to be. I used to stream old school RuneScape full time. But when I started out, I did a bunch of different things. Like I started out as a variety streamer because I wanted to do Twitch, but I didn't know what to do. There was loads of games I enjoyed, but also which games did the community enjoy was just something I wasn't really aware of. So I played a bunch of different things. The first game I ever got like 70 viewers on was playing Raft. And Raft is a great game. I love that game. I still play it now. But then I ended up doing RuneScape full-time for like 2 years. And then I just decided, you know what? I don't want to stick to just one game for the rest of my streaming time. So I went variety and it was honestly fine. Like a lot of people noticed a drop-off. I didn't because I slowly integrated it. But yeah, now I'm definitely variety. I want to branch out more than just variety though. I did a cooking stream for the first time the other day. And honestly, it was so much fun and it had such a good reception. I was like pretty much double my concurrent viewers just for a cooking stream. And I just thought, you know what, why not bounce off that a bit more? Why not go out and do some IRL content or something like that? Because I think just my reactions to the world around me and the things that I'm doing is what people watch for and what people enjoy. So I think definitely doing more of that is something I want to expand on. If you want to call that variety, then yeah, it's variety, I suppose.
I think that makes sense for variety streamers because people are clearly there for you and not for the game if you do variety. So if you do something like cooking, which everyone understands, mm-hmm. has experienced or has seen their family experience, so they kind of get it. They can see your personality in a more neutral setting. So that does make a lot of sense. But in terms of the presenting stuff, so you joined Guild about 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah, it's 2 years ago now.
And that was... you got connected with them separate of me, but then I was the person who sort of convinced you.
Yeah, you were kind of like the convincing hand in the deal. Yeah, because, and that wasn't because I was, I don't know. I mean, I suppose I would say that I was a bit skeptical of joining an org. It's not something that many of my friends have experienced. A lot of people that I've met in the industry, it's not something that I can go to a lot of my friends about and be like, oh, what is it like to join an org? Because a lot of them haven't, and they haven't had that experience. So it really helped me to have someone that I knew was not just part of Guild, but also someone that I knew weren't going to try and push me into something that maybe they thought was a bad idea. And you spoke praises about Guild. And honestly, I've loved every second that I've been there. It's sometimes it's hard work, but honestly, I love the days where I get to go into London because I'm doing like work on this or work on that, or I get to go abroad to a different country to work on an event. And yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for you that had kind of talked me through it, we sat down and had a long call together and kind of talked about the things that I wanted to do. And you said that you thought it was a good idea. And if I hadn't had that, I don't know if I would have gone for it. But because of that, I'm so, so glad that I did. And it's worked immensely on my confidence. Like the past 2 years, I've done things that I would interview David Beckham, for example. Like that is just something that is wild to me and wild to so many people that know me. And I don't think I would have had the confidence to do something like that if it weren't for these opportunities. So yeah, it's been huge for my confidence, definitely.
Yeah, I think everyone I know who went to Guild has come out a better person, even if they're not with Guild anymore. So yeah. All of the experiences you get from being a part of an org like Guild, you're going to develop, you're going to improve as a person, you're going to learn new skills. And I think one of the big things for you, you said confidence. Talk about some of the things Guild has got you to do whilst you've been there. You mentioned interviewing David Beckham.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
I think the first ever day that I joined, we were doing an apparel shoot. So it was for some of their merch and it was go in, you know, model some of the apparel. But at first I thought it was just going to be my joining video. So the same day I did my joining video, but they also said, hey, while you're here, you know, if you want to get involved with some of the merch shoot. And I was so hesitant because before that day, I don't think I'd ever had anyone professionally take my photograph before. Like, I hate pictures of myself. I don't really like looking at pictures of myself that I haven't taken myself. And I think, honestly, that just comes from being on the internet for so long and always being in control of what you look like and the lighting, the camera, the angles, everything is something that you control. So having someone else do it for me and then know that those pictures were going to be posted online. Of course, if I didn't like it, they wouldn't have posted it, but I think after a certain amount of time, I had to be like, okay, well, this is you. This is how you look. This is how a camera takes your picture. And I have to be okay with it. And I think through doing that, I've gained more confidence as well, because you start to see yourself in a different light. You know, you get used to it. So you're like, okay, well, maybe this isn't as bad as I thought it was. But photo shoots is one of the biggest things that I've, you know, I struggled with massively before, but now it's come to be something that's like really normal in my routine. And that has really helped my confidence a lot. Video shoots, again, kind of like never really having to act, I suppose, but there have been scenarios where I've had to do what I would describe as like really cheesy, like, you know, kind of esports acting with like the crossed arms and all that kind of stuff. And again, once you do it a couple of times and you know, it gets posted online, you'll realize no one's gonna, you know, no one's gonna hate me for this. No one's gonna take the mic. So things like that just really helped my confidence, and obviously like interviews and kind of presenting. And I think beforehand, I would probably have stumbled over my words so much when filming a video or just interviewing someone. It's not something that's easy at all. But the amount of times I've done it now, I think I'm so much more confident in it now. And a lot of people tell me how I guess, come across more professionally. And because of that, like some really cool things I've done recently, I interviewed the cast of a Netflix show, Lockwood & Co. And I was the first streamer ever to interview the cast of a Netflix, well, that Netflix show. And I had the director and the three actors, and I had to interview them on Front Page. And it was like, I was so incredibly nervous. But everyone said that I did a really good job, and Netflix came back with such great feedback. So that was really, that built my confidence a lot. Yeah.
I feel like, and this is just from my experience being in esports as a caster, host, presenter, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like you have all the components for an on-screen talent. You have, you know, an easy to understand accent, mm-hmm. and a good voice for it. You know, you project your voice well. You're very smiley, very energetic. I mean, another big thing, you're good looking. It always helps on camera. So all of those things come together to make people on-screen talent naturally. But then there's always the stuff that comes down to experience, which you've described.
Yeah.
Now that you're getting that experience, is that something you think you're going to do in the future as a spin-off from streaming?
I still think that like live presenting is something that really terrifies me. The fact that if something's broadcast live, you can't really make a mistake, because if you do, I mean, it's seen by loads of people and you can't say, oh, cut that. It's like, there's no cutting it when it's live, you know? But I would say maybe more so in the filming side of things, in the video side of things, I think that's something that I wouldn't mind doing more of. As for live stuff, like live presenting, that's still something that scares me so much. And I don't know, like you've done it in the past and like so many of our friends have done it in the past. And I don't know how you get over those nerves, how you get over like, I guess you have to be really knowledgeable about what you're talking about as well, mm-hmm. which is maybe something, you know, if the right opportunity came up and it was something I was really passionate about, then I think I'd be okay to do it. But, you know, it's so nerve wracking. I don't know how I would do live stuff. But
Yeah, I think the nerves comes with practice. And like you said, being a knowledgeable person in the thing you're talking about. I think if you're interviewing people, the more research you do, the easier it gets and so on. And I think the more times you do it, the more you realize what you need to research and what you need to prepare. It's kind of like when you're growing up and you do an interview for a job and they say, oh, make sure you go in and learn this beforehand. Mm-hmm. And you're just preparing yourself for the scenario that's about to happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know what that scenario is until you get into it multiple times. And then you start to learn little tricks and, you know, like I've messed up so many times on camera, but I learn little tricks to get out of it or play it off or whatever it is. And so with more time, I'm sure that's something. So you'd like to do presenting, but not live. Is that what you're...
I think I wouldn't mind doing more kind of like interview work and I guess podcast stuff like this. Like I've always had the idea of starting my own podcast, but never something I've really had the confidence to just step out of my comfort zone and actually do it. But I love talking about things that I feel like I have more experience on. And that's obviously come a lot with streaming. Like I do 2 hour just chatting segments, usually 5 days a week on my streams. And that's a lot of talking. But if I didn't have people to talk back to and have a conversation with, then it would be really hard. But I suppose the live nerves, if it's my own stream, it's fine. Like people are used to how I am and I don't feel like they're expecting anything magnificent. If it's like a live show with like thousands of people watching, I'm sure I'd really struggle. But definitely more, I guess, just casual conversation side of things or just interviewing someone. Like I don't think I have as many nerves around interviewing anymore. I mean, I feel like once a lot of people were really shocked about the David Beckham thing, because I suppose a lot of people especially that I know, really, really look up to David Beckham. And like, if you're super into football, that's going to be like a massive deal to you. And I, of course, know how famous he is. But because I wasn't in, like, I'm not into football as much, to me, it just felt more of like a casual conversation. And obviously it wasn't live, so it was perfect. If we mess up, we can cut it. But yeah, more filming YouTube stuff, I think I would really like to do. But live streaming is just really nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting because your main thing is live, like you said, yeah. That you feel comfortable in that environment. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's roll it back. Let's go back to early Harry growing up and mm-hmm. work out how you got to where you are now. I'm also interested to hear about the confidence thing you spoke about that you've developed in the last few years and how you got to that lower confidence Harry before all this and where that all came from. So start off, let's talk about gaming. Where did you start gaming?
Oh God, so young. I mean, I feel like most people probably started on early consoles, you know, like the first console I remember having was, I think it was called a Dreamcast console. And I honestly don't even know what games I played on it at this point, but I remember having a Dreamcast. My dad was always into gaming. Like my dad's a big gamer. He still plays now, he plays Rocket League, Call of Duty, like Warzone, you name it, he probably plays it. And he got like, there's pictures of me as like literal 4 year old, like playing PC games. And I actually did a Reddit post the other day because there was a picture of me that he found and I'm playing this game on a computer and the monitor is like this big. But I took to Reddit to find out what game it was and they actually found it was incredible. So I'll try and find you the picture. But yeah, it all started with my dad, I guess. Like he's a big gamer. So he had me playing games from a really, really early age. And then I guess I just really never stopped. I mean, maybe less, I played The Sims. I played like life simulation games. I played a lot of stuff over the years. And then I suppose I didn't really start streaming until I started in 2017. So yeah, like 5 years ago, I was like in university and I started streaming on my PlayStation 4 with a little, with a little PlayStation 4 camera. So it's come a long way since then. And in terms of, honestly, like, I don't know. I suppose the lack of confidence thing in not being as outspoken and possibly like not having the confidence to do all the things that I do now probably came from the fact that a lot of my life was just spent online. Like when I was 10 years old, my family moved to France. And we lived in like a super derelict village. I didn't speak any French when I moved out there. So I had to learn everything. Mostly everyone I spoke to for that time was online. And I would just play games and like talk to friends online until I learned how to speak French like 3 years later. So I think just kind of growing up entirely online and never really going out as much. I didn't really go out until I moved back to England and I would like then hang out with friends and things like that. But yeah, I think it just came from honestly being a bit of a recluse when I was a teenager. And now I think that gaming is such a great place to actually be social and make friends with people. Like all of my really close friends now I've made from streaming and I go out with them all the time and I see them all the time. But back then it was a bit different. Like it didn't used to be when I was playing games as like a young teenager, it wasn't really like that. Like you shouldn't have spoken to people online when you were that age, like when you were that young. So I guess it was just like, yeah, me playing some single player games at home and like never really going outside the house much.
Yeah.
But now it's different. It's very different now.
Yeah. I remember when I first got into online gaming communities, I'd have lots of people who had, gaming characters as their profile pictures mm-hmm. on Facebook and they wouldn't have a single picture of them online. You know, they're protecting their own identity, but that also created a space where people could hide their identity and be people that they claimed they weren't. Mm-hmm. And so I was always concerned at first, but then there became this sort of transition where you're like, well, no, because, you know, they've got social media. I know what they look like.
Yeah.
I can get in a call with them and speak to them for 7 hours every single day. So I know what kind of behavior they have. And that's when you start meeting up with people and then that's where you start forming those close connections like we have with a lot of our online friends. I guess you spoke about being isolated in France and how you didn't really spend any time with people in person, but there is someone who I assume you spend a lot of time with and it's your sister. Mm-hmm. And both of you big gamers and are very close as well.
Yeah.
Was that a big factor for you in terms of keeping yourself socially active, even though it was a family member through that time?
It was nice, I guess, and I don't really, I probably didn't even realize it at the time because she was just my sister, you know, and someone that I'd grown up with anyway. But I think that time when living in France was probably one of the bigger bonding times because we would get home and we would speak English together, whereas like we would go to school and we would have to speak French or what little French we knew anyway. So yeah, and it was definitely at that time that we both kind of got into gaming as well, because I say there wasn't much to do, but I also did have a life that I'm now very grateful for, because I think if I'd grown up in the part of London that I was living in at the time before we moved, life would have been really, really different. And I probably would have got into some crowds that, you know, I wouldn't have maybe wanted to hang out with now. But in France, we would kind of go out, and I was really into photography as well at the time. So I would go out and just take pictures, and like Sid, I'd make Sid be my model, and she freaking hated it. She was like, no, I'm not doing this. But I mean, it was just one of the only things we had to do. It was either like we go out, cycle around and take pictures, or we went home and played games. So it was, yeah, I think that was a big bonding experience at the time. And also probably where we got into a lot of our gaming as well. We would play like Second Life, we would play RuneScape, we would play World of Warcraft. Like the first word that I learned to touch type was runescape.com. It was really sad. But I feel like that time was so pivotal for kind of the things that I do now. I gained a lot of experience for what I do now and in pretty much just like gaming and learning to build computers and just like random things like that that have helped now.
You mentioned a lot of different games throughout that journey. Mm-hmm. You then sort of went to streaming. You said old school RuneScape was a big game for you for 2 years. Since then, you've played so many different games. We met through Among Us, where there's a lot of crossover of communities. But I'm interested to know, what are your top five games of all time?
See, when people ask me this, I never know whether to say, because to me, there's a big crossover with what I think a really good game is and also what's just so nostalgic to me. And I think most of the games that I would call my top five are like just massively nostalgic games. So I would say The Sims. Okay, there might not be an order, actually. Let me think about this. So The Sims has to be one of them.
I'm sorry.
Have you choked on your water?
Yeah, water went round, down the wrong hole.
Oh. The Sims has to be up there. I've spent countless hours on The Sims, probably. And all that time, most of that time was all spent in France. Like, I remember every time a new expansion pack came out, my dad would get it for me and load it onto my computer for the time that I woke up. And yeah, that's definitely up there. RuneScape has to be, because I've got countless hours on that game. I think I've got 1,000 plus, like well over 1,000, maybe 2,000 hours on RuneScape. And that doesn't include the time I played it as a kid either. So that's just like just streaming it and playing it. Detroit Become Human is probably one of the first ever single player games I played the entire way through and loved it. And I've played through it maybe two or three more times at this point.
Well, describe that game to me, because I know the other two well.
It's really good. You should definitely play it. It's basically a single player game, and it's about AI taking over, I guess, Detroit, but probably the world. And it's like a choice-based game. So everything is a choice in the game. And there's multiple different ways that the story can play out. But it's just so, like, especially for the time it was released, which I think is maybe 4 or 5 years old at this point. I don't know exactly. But graphically, it's insane. The story is incredible. And I don't know, just the way the game plays is really, really good. So you should try it. So that would probably be my third.
I have to watch it.
You should play it, Greg. Come on, you play single-player game.
I don't play single-player games. I vicariously play them through other people. I like to watch other people play them.
Play it on stream.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, I think. So we've got Sims, RuneScape, Detroit Become Human, Overwatch. I play that game. I've got so many hours in Overwatch.
You have got back on it with Overwatch too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've played the game since it came out. I never really had. And that's the other thing about like streaming is great, because you meet so many people that like the same games as you. I mean, some of the Discords that we're in together, the Discord I set up is like the place where people just love to hang out and come together and play games together. And streaming has definitely done that for me. And I don't think I'd have played as many hours in Overwatch if I didn't have great people to play it with. Like every time I can just hop on and play with someone different. So Overwatch, I mean, in terms of the games I like now, Overwatch would be number one. And I don't think it's changed for a very long time. And then fifth, that's a very difficult question.
Some people like to put games in that have been important for them in their career.
Yeah.
Some people like to put games that they find the actual game itself really fun.
Yeah.
I think this fifth spot's an interesting one, because I feel like you've gone straight for those other four. They were really obvious. And now you're sort of, uncertain.
Because there are so many games that have paved such, like Among Us, for example, was massive for us and for me especially. It was one of the first times, I mean, I don't hold it now, but it was after playing Among Us was one of the first times that I literally had 700-800 concurrent viewers on my stream for a month or two. So in terms of growth and like meeting people and getting to know people and to be the place I am now, like Among Us definitely was that game. But I think the issue with that is just we milked it so much. Like it got so overplayed and I would wake up 10 a.m. every morning, get in a lobby with people. And after a while it became like, I think people had seen enough of it, to be honest.
Also, I don't know if you know, you were quite predictable.
Oh yeah. Oh, I hated Fly. I got so angry. Playing with you is difficult sometimes.
I knew it was you every time because you killed in the... So like, let me just describe the Harry kill every single round.
Oh God.
I'm with someone alone, turn off the lights, kill them, run as far away as possible. When the lights get fixed and everyone finds a body, you just claim you're somewhere else that's miles away from anyone. And then no one's seen you that round. It just happens to be that you're in that safe spot. And then you just stay quiet and you get away with it. And I'm just sat there going, well, I know it's Harry because you always did the lights off kill, run away really far.
I wasn't very good at gaslighting people. I would say I wasn't. And I think that's probably what made the game annoying for me to play after a while, is because everyone got really good at it. And I'm a bit of a pushover, I would say, sometimes. And I would know that my intuition was correct on other people, but I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So I was just like, okay, maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it wasn't. And I think with games like that, you have to be brutal and you have to take your mind out of the game for a second, or like your emotions out of the game. But that's really hard for me to do.
You were there during my famous incident where I started slamming the ground because you're innocent with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt really bad for me at that time because you're like waiting for everyone to talk it through.
Yeah.
And then everyone jumped the gun. But anyway, we had some fun times with Among Us. You're always like, you were sneaky, I felt like. I think I tried to be. You're always very sneaky, but then you're also quite like quiet a lot of times. So that meant people say my voice changed
when I was the killer. Mm-hmm. I spoke more when I was the killer than when I wasn't, trying to prove myself innocent, which there's a reason I don't play that game anymore. Like I hope it makes a revival sometimes, but I don't know. I don't think I could play it the amount that we played it back then. It was rough.
Yeah, I think it was also you were one of the people who was in pretty much every single day as well.
Yeah.
So I was often the sub, so I'd often be watching, which is why I think I worked out everyone, because I'd just watch your stream and be like, oh, that's what Harry does every time. Now I know.
Exactly. Being an observer sometimes got you that advantage, huh?
Yeah. It was always funny as well, because remember Yeti was like by far the best player in our lobbies. I used to watch every one of his videos, and so I quickly picked up all of his habits, and he had these like secret strats that only he did that no one else knew. And there was one time where he replicated it exactly as he did in one of his videos. And I was there like, well, I know it's Yeti now, but I can't say it's Yeti.
Meta information. Can't use it.
Yeah. And that was always the problem. It's like you could know it was someone, but you couldn't tell everyone you knew it was them because they technically hadn't given enough information away. Mm-hmm. But anyway, enough about the old Among Us era. I'm sure there's a lot of people getting nostalgia. I've had quite a few people. In fact, someone I met recently, I'd spoke to them about Among Us. I'm like, oh yeah, I love the Among Us era, the morning lobbies. I'd watch them every morning, and I'd be like, you do realize that annoying nerdy guy who always knew who everyone was or where everyone was, everything, would check admin and cams, and like, oh yeah, he was always in the lobby.
That's you.
And like, they don't remember me, but they remember the gist of the whole group.
Yeah. Before we go off of Among Us, I actually have a really cute story. So when I was 13 years old, way too young to be playing online games, and I guess that's just a whole nother tangent, but obviously living in France, and I was playing this game called Second Life, which is like an avatar game, and it's like a sandbox avatar game. It's kind of weird, kind of has a bad reputation now. But back in the day, there was like a teen grid and a main grid. And if you were a teenager, you'd play in teen grid. And then over the age of 18, you'd play on main. I was playing that game when I was 12 years old, which was probably not good. But I met a girl on that game called Christina. And when she turned 18 years old, she moved over to the main grid. And at this time, I was 13 years old. And I lost contact with her. We had each other on Facebook and stuff. But I lost contact with her for all those years. And then about 2 years ago, I guess, or a year and a half ago, when we were consistently playing Among Us and I was playing with Hafu, a girl comes in my stream called Xtina. And she was like, oh my God, I don't know if you remember me, but we used to play Second Life together literally 11 years ago. And it was this girl that had been watching Hafu's streams, and she saw my name and heard my voice, and she knew that it was me. And now we stay in contact all the time from like all those years ago. So it was really, really sweet. It's good.
Yeah. It was crazy how much those lobbies reached so many different places. You don't realize until you sort of take a step back and see each of those different streamers had their own view of it. And then people would watch the YouTube videos of the highlights, and then the people would watch the VODs back because you'd want to see what happened in the lobbies.
Mm-hmm. So much content came out.
Yeah, it was a crazy era and the crossovers that happened with it.
Yeah.
But it didn't make your top five.
No, it didn't, no.
So what's number five on the list?
I'd have to say like probably the Call of Duty franchise. Just, I don't even know if I could pick a specific game. I can't, okay.
You got to choose one. Well, I should have said that for Sims
Everyone
as well.
Says Modern Warfare, right? Modern Warfare 2. And I would have to say it'd probably be mine too. It was the first time I had an Xbox 360. I was the kind of person at school, I was one of the only like few girls that took IT. And obviously through that, I made a lot of like guy friends in IT because they were the only people in it. And we would hang out and stuff at lunchtimes. And then we would all add each other on Xbox. And then when we would get home, we would just sit and play Modern Warfare 2. And I think that was where, that was before I got a gaming PC again. So there was like a short period of my life where I didn't have a gaming PC. And it was like the console stage for me. So I had an Xbox 360 I bought myself, and I bought Modern Warfare 2, and we would just play that all the time. So I would say Modern Warfare 2 is probably what sparked my love for gaming again when I was in like my mid-teens, maybe like 16, 17. And then on from there, I went to get a gaming PC again so that I could stream. So yeah Modern Warfare 2.
Pretty solid top five. I think there's a lot of crossover with a lot of people. I think Sims, RuneScape, Call of Duty have all hit a lot of people.
And it's all like very nostalgic stuff, isn't it?
And then Overwatch is kind of like a lot of modern people's favorite games.
Yeah.
And then Detroit, whatever that was.
There's probably some fantastic games that I would say now, but I still don't play a lot of single player games. Like all of the games that have won awards and stuff, I should get around to playing them, but single player games are very difficult for me. I would not play them off stream. So they're purely an on stream game. And sometimes it's difficult. Being a mainly a just chatting streamer, it's always really nervous, really nerve wracking to end your 2 hour just chatting segment and be like, okay, now we're going to try a game. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, am I going to lose all my viewers if I try a game? So that's why I go with comfort picks a lot of the time. It's really difficult to kind of take that leap and play something that people might not enjoy. And then you have a bad day.
So you mentioned about your live streams and all the viewers and everything. But there's one thing that I think when I first met you that separated you from a lot of other streamers was the community that you'd built around your stream. And there's a lot of people who are subbed to you who don't even watch your stream, but they continue subbing. It's almost like a membership to the, to the community, right?
I remember you calling it that.
Yeah.
You got a membership to my Discord.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you've got a sub-only section in your Discord that's incredibly active, and you've met up a lot of times with them, and they meet up together.
Yeah.
A lot of friendships formed through that community. Mm-hmm. There was about a two-month period where I hung out in the community a lot, especially during COVID, where I didn't have many IRL opportunities to hang out with people. So I was always mesmerized by this community you built out. I guess I've never asked, how did it start? Like, where did the community start?
So I feel like I remember specifically. It was January 1st, 2020. I was kind of setting out. I don't really ever write goals down, but I just have goals in my head about what I want to achieve. And I think the first day of 2020, I was like, okay, this year I don't want to worry as much about viewers because that's something I can't really control. But what I can control is how much fun my current viewers have. So I said, I'm not going to do like viewership numbers, whatever. I never turned it off because honestly, I'm not strong enough to do that. But I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit down. I'm going to go over my Discord, you know, kind of prepare it so that I can invite more people to the Discord, have more people hang out, do movie nights, do games and stuff like that. And honestly, from putting that effort into my Discord, my community kind of grew and grew and grew. And I would make sure that whenever I joined stream, I would say hello to everyone. I would invite people to the Discord. And then during COVID, I think I went through a stage where I would sit in my own Discord in voice channels every single night. And I would just play games with people. We would watch movies, watch videos. And from that, a massive, massive community grew. Now, is it always sunshine and rainbows? Definitely not. Doing that kind of thing, I think, is something I never really intended to come across the way it did. And I think one of the issues is obviously it was COVID. No one could really hang out in real life. And everyone had a lot of spare time, you know, like not a lot of people were working. Everyone was at home. and things like that. So I had no issues spending a lot of my time in Discord. You know, we literally couldn't leave the house. But what I think that did was kind of set a precedent where people thought that I was then always available. I was always one of those streamers that would spend a lot of time doing everything for her community and sitting in my Discord and having people come and play games with me, which, you know, I averaged maybe like 350 viewers at the time. So I'm not a massive, massive streamer, but still, I think it made people think that like they were more entitled to my time than I wanted them to be. At the end of the day, it was kind of my decision if I wanted to hang out in my Discord and I wanted to play games with people. That was a great thing, and it built a lot of really strong foundations in my community. But it also came with a lot of downsides when people maybe got, I don't want to say like overly attached, or they just expected me to be around more than I could be around, basically. Especially after COVID ended.
Yeah, I guess with that, did you start getting individuals starting DMing you and
trying to get
like personal time with you?
I was always one of those people that like the close friends I'd made in my Discord, my DMs were open to them, you know, like I would chat to people, I would help people out. And I think that's one of the bigger things that came with it is like, you know, I'm always down to listen. If someone's has an issue with something, if someone's got a problem, I'm down to listen to it. But it got to a point where I think I was there for other people more than I was there for myself. And I devoted so much time to my community that at that point I'd just become, in some situations, kind of like an agony aunt for a lot of things that were going on. And then people would argue in the Discord and people would kind of like headbutt about things and have altercations. And it was so much stress on me because I knew that I was in charge of this place and I was the one that built it to be what it is now. And I was the one that had to sort it out. And that is really, really stressful, especially as someone, you know, like streaming is my main job, but I also do have like a personal life outside of that, you know. And there was a whole bunch of issues that came with the size and the closeness of my community. Don't get me wrong, I've made incredible friendships, and the majority of those friendships have no issues at all. And it's allowed for so many people in my community to meet without me even being present, you know. I had one of my community members the other day that was like really down about something. He met up and went to a football game with someone else from my community. And that's, seeing that stuff is always so, so heartwarming to me. And I still sometimes just sit and get emotional about the fact that I've built somewhere that so many people like to spend their time and where so many people have made lifelong friends. And I've definitely done meetups in the past where I would say like get a group of like 10, 15 of us and we would all go and like spend the weekend somewhere and just go out, have drinks, restaurants and things like that. Granted, I don't think it happens as much anymore because I've realized some of the complications that can come with doing stuff like that. It's always so stressful for me to try and plan and organize those kinds of things. So as of kind of last year and this year, I would say that I haven't really done that as much. And I say, you know, if you want to come and meet me, I'll be at TwitchCon, but I'm not going to sit and organize places for us to eat, things for us to do together, you know, because I do have my own life, and as much as I love everyone that's, you know, come to spend time in my community and has become friends, it can be really damaging to put yourself in that kind of place, and you're kind of opening yourself up to people thinking that you can commit more of your time to them than I actually can.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
It's something that's, I think a lot of streamers will deal with through their Twitch chat alone, mm-hmm. And maybe through social media and engaging in their stories, for example, like responding to stories, and you'll see people where they'll be very one way.
Yeah.
Where it's that parasocial idea, right? Where
someone
thinks you're closer to them than they are. And so they'll message you first 15 times in a row, mm-hmm. and you'll give them like 2-word response, and they'll think that that means that there's something there. And like, especially within a community where you're active in the community as one person, and there's say 50 of them, and they all see you as their friend, whereas you see the community as the community, right?
Yeah,
it can get quite challenging in that way. Has it had any, and if you're willing to talk about it, had any particularly bad incidents for you?
I think there definitely has been bad incidents, and I don't think I can name individual circumstances, but I guess more so a case of not being able to be there equally for every single person that wanted me to be there for them. So a lot of the time, I think a lot of the issues came from situation where I would maybe play like a game with a certain person, then another person would feel like they're missing out, and maybe felt like it got to the point where it felt like they thought I had favoritism with specific people over other community members and things like that. And, you know, I understand that. It's a scenario that not a lot of people, I suppose, are used to, because streaming is still a relatively new thing. And now I think we're lucky that more kind of boundaries, or people are more knowledgeable about how ways to set boundaries with people, which I wish I had known from the start as well. But it's difficult because I feel like I have made really, really close, you know, lifelong friends in my community. And some of those people, naturally, I will feel more comfortable with, and more, I guess, more of a friendship with certain people than others. But the issue is, when you present yourself as a streamer, people get jealous about that. People will get annoyed that you maybe are better friends with one person than you are with another. Mm-hmm. So I think I've learned through that is just to kind of not open myself up to everyone's friendship as much as I've done in the past, despite the fact that, you know, I like doing that. I think there are some really, really cool people in my community, and just people that are very chill also. But there are also people that aren't. And it can get complicated. And that's not to blame any specific person, because it's a new scenario for a lot of people. You know, you chat with someone online every day and you're in their community and you're hanging out with friends and whatever else. And it's very easy for those lines to get blurred. But I think just to protect yourself and protect them and other people, there definitely needs to be more better ways to set boundaries, I think. And a lot of my friends go through similar things and get in scary positions. And it's one of those things with streaming online, you know, and celebrities get it too. Like, you know, there are people, celebrities, that actually get it. But I think you have a whole team of like security and people mm-hmm. that know how to deal with those things. As a streamer, you grow gradually and you don't always notice when you should set those boundaries. So I think that's something that a lot of people can learn from, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest bit, is the scale up of streaming.
Mm.
You can start where you can read every chat message and give them your full time of day, yeah, to the point where you might miss the occasional chat message, to the point where you start building a community. And then there's a point where the community grows so big that there's people in your community you've never even spoken to.
Yeah.
And so that whole scaling up, as you mentioned, comes with the challenge of at what point do you create those boundaries, and also the fallout that happens off the back of it. You know, I tried forming a community similar to what I saw with mm-hmm. yours, and I realized it wasn't for me because I didn't want to dedicate that amount of time, especially as I was coaching at the same time as that. So I didn't have that ability to engage with it as often. And one of my mods messaged me saying, you need to be there more often because people are there for you. And I was like, well, unfortunately, I'm not there for them. They want to build a community around each other. I think a lot of them have now gone off and, you know, they play games together and everything. That's great.
Yeah.
But there is that element of they need you to be there all the time. And then when you try and build a life separate of your community, it can get quite tricky.
I think that's definitely one of the issues, is that you want to build a space where people can hang out with each other and play games with each other. But a lot of the reason that that doesn't happen is because the streamer isn't there to make those connections. People would only join Discord calls if I was there. And that was something that was alarming to me, I guess, after a while, because I wanted people to be friends with each other, and I built the community for people to make friends. But inevitably, you are going to have people that will only join the chat because of streamer, you know, mm-hmm. because they want to speak to that person. They don't want to speak to anyone else.
Mm.
And I have so many people in my community now, luckily, that, and in the past, people who have just dropped off naturally. Like, everyone has things in their life that they're doing. They'll watch a certain streamer at a certain time and then they'll move on. But I have a lot of people now that are genuine friends with each other, and that's really nice. Granted, the Discord isn't as, I guess, active as it used to be, because I don't spend a lot of my time there anymore because of these issues that I've encountered in the past. But I think that's one reason a lot of people struggle to make really close communities, is because oftentimes the people want the streamer to be there, and it's really hard to do that, especially when you want to stream, go live your life, do, you know, exterior things and have a personal life too. It's hard to do that.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of people out there who are seeking community. They're seeking mm-hmm. friendship, whatever it is, a place to belong. And the way they deal with that is finding streamers, and they feel like the connection they build with that streamer through watching them every day is that connection. And there is an element of concern around that from my point of view with how close you can get to a streamer now. And people should be finding communities like yours and making friends with the people around them. And I feel like a lot of people don't recognize that. And so hopefully as time goes on and people get used to this more, the world we're in, they'll start to do that. But community aside, you've done a lot of different things throughout your journey, but I'm interested to know, what does the future look like for you, Harry? What are you thinking, you know, like in 5 years' time, what do you think you'll be doing?
The 5 years' time question is so daunting, because I'm approaching my 30s now. I'm turning 28 in a couple of months. And I didn't think this is something that I might still be doing at this point in my life. I think what I want to do now is transition over to non-live content creation. So I'd love, YouTube was my first love. Before I ever streamed, I would film myself playing DayZ and then upload that to YouTube. And all those videos are privated. I have so many privated videos, just random things that I was doing, book reviews and like just random stuff like that. But YouTube has always been my first love. And it's something that I've found really difficult to nail it, because I still don't want to pay for an editor, sadly. I should do it soon at some point, but it's like, I have so much creative like control, I guess, over the things that I want to be put out. So handing that creative control over to someone else is really difficult. But in order for my channel to grow, that's something that I definitely need to do. So non-live content creation is something that I really want to get more into. I would love to grow my YouTube channel to be as big as my Twitch is now. So definitely that, and I suppose more just working the business side of things, I think. Twitch has opened my eyes to so many things and so many incredible people that now I feel like if I were to stop streaming tomorrow, I would have a really good support system to fall back into and lots of people I know that would help me out in the industry. So I think I'm not naive to thinking that I couldn't stream forever. I definitely can't. I think that's something that I know will come to an end possibly in the next, you know, 3-4 years. But I hope at that point that I have something to kind of fall back into. I'd love to stay in the industry. I love everything that surrounds it. And just working with people on more YouTube stuff and doing more of my own YouTube stuff. And then hopefully just like some IRL content too. I'd love to, you know, travel and film some of that, or just go on days out and film that too, because being at my desk all the time and being in one room in one office every single day definitely makes you think that you need to step out a little bit more. At least that's what I've experienced after doing it for so many years. So I think just expanding, really. And if that means possibly doing something to open my own business, I'd love to do merch and stuff like that eventually. Just surrounding myself with like-minded people, people that want to support me on my journey. And I definitely have that. I have a really good manager who's always got my best interest at heart. And he knows how I want to kind of go about things and look to do more things in the future that don't necessarily just revolve around streaming all the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, more of that, hopefully.
No, it's an interesting one, because so many people in your position have no idea the growth they might get or the decline in growth they might get. Yeah. I mean, we've seen people from that Among Us lobby when we were around, who now can't even stream to make any money. My numbers go up and down crazy based off of other stuff, but I've always got another job. Whereas you're in that position where streaming has been the center, then Guild helps stabilize that with the that situation. So you've had that stable income as a content creator.
Which a lot of people don't have. And I've seen so many of my friends who I think should be bigger than me in streaming, and they just don't have necessarily the support system. They haven't been offered the opportunity to like join an org and have more of a stable income every month, or they don't have a manager to help them with partnerships. Because one thing that a lot of streamers go through, I guess my kind of size, is they're accepting deals here, there and everywhere for very small amounts of money, and the more they do that, the more they're putting themselves in a position where they're never going to get offered anything more because they don't know their value. So I think definitely having the support system to help you realize your potential and realize your value, because, you know, you're doing a sponsorship to 400 or 500 people. People trust you. If you're someone that manages a community like mine or a stream like mine, People know that it massively helps me to carry on full-time streaming, but also they just trust your opinion. And I think that is so valuable to businesses. And something that sadly a lot of content creators that don't have the support, they don't quite realize how much they're worth. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess the other side of that is the things you can do for them, mm-hmm. whether it be a video piece for them or mm-hmm. now you can do interviews and presenting stuff for yeah. people. But no, it's interesting to hear how your journey is different to other people. I think the community aspect is definitely something that maybe in hindsight was a massive part of what led you to succeed through mm-hmm. that Among Us era. And you never really know what's going to be that next big successful yeah. thing. And so you kind of got to keep your eyes open and be reactive to what's yeah. happening next, whether it be the next game, the mm-hmm. next trend, doing your cooking stuff. Maybe that's where you're going to go.
Hopefully. It was really fun.
I've got to ask a question though. Uh-huh. I've seen the clip. What was the hairdryer to melt the butter incident about?
So one of my friends, Fitwaffle, you've probably seen her on social media somewhere. She's all over TikTok. But she comes in my streams all the time and she's such a big presence online and she's incredible. She's released 2 books and she sends me her books all the time and she writes a lovely note saying, you know, you have a wonderful community. Thank you for being so welcoming, etc. So I thought, you know what, I'll do a cooking stream and I'll try and make something from her book. And me being me, it just didn't really go to plan. So I tried to make some banana bread and I put the butter in this massive metal bowl. But then I read that it had to be melted. So I obviously couldn't put the metal, but I'm not that bad. I couldn't put the metal bowl in the microwave because obviously mm-hmm. that's a bit of a faux pas.
You could have taken the butter
I didn't want out to. Of the metal bowl. That would have been way too much effort. I looked around me and I saw a hairdryer and I thought, you know what? This should work. It's a metal bowl. So I heated up the metal bowl with the hairdryer. People got mad at me for some reason. It's not like I applied it directly, which I did do afterwards. To be fair, it was taking a long time. So I applied the hairdryer directly to the butter for a few seconds. But it was made for a funny clip. The whole stream was really funny. So it was worth it. You know, I think that's why those things are good. Don't take yourself so seriously. Like that's mm-hmm. what I've learned. I don't take myself seriously at all. I make a fool out of myself all the time. And I think that's why people enjoy the streams mm-hmm. because I'm just very authentic and very much myself. You know, when I stream, it's like, I think I struggle very much in life at being someone that is myself around everyone. And I don't know why that is. Like there are some people that I just click instantly and I really get on with and we have the same kind of banter and all of those things. But a lot of the time I'm a bit of a recluse in social situations. I'm very nervous to meet new people. And because I know that I don't always get on with people immediately, I find being around people so incredibly awkward, especially if I don't click with them. But that's why I love streaming so much, is because as soon as I turn on my stream, I feel like everyone around me is just my friend and I can be super authentic and like be super myself. And I don't really, sometimes I forget that there's so many people watching and that it's live because I say some wild things sometimes. I'm just very much myself. But I think that's why people enjoy it. So just be yourself. And
I'm interested in what you just said there, because I would have said the opposite having met you. You said you feel like you can't be yourself when you first meet people.
But that's because I feel comfortable around you, though. I'm very much my foolish self. I guess I've never met self.
You before.
Exactly.
Because yeah. when we first met, that was one of the first times I went and met people outside of lockdown. Yeah. And it was just really normal because we spent so much time online with the Among Us, mm-hmm. with the community and everything.
Yeah.
So that was just normal Harry.
I suppose when you joined my Discord, you probably saw the very most authentic myself yeah. that you've ever seen, which is yeah. why I spent so much time in my community, because I feel like I'm really not afraid to be myself. And like I have that instant banter, which is what I really value having with people, because it makes it easier to just to really be yourself.
What is it about yourself then that you don't feel comfortable presenting to new people?
I honestly, it's such a difficult question, because I don't think there is anything in particular that is a bad thing. I just think, you know, when you just meet someone and you just like immediately click with that person and you know that you could say stupid things or you could make stupid jokes and they will get it and they'll be like, they'll laugh along with it. But there are some people I could go for dinner with and just have a really funny time. And there are some people that I would really struggle to just make small talk with. I feel like everyone has that experience, mm-hmm. right?
I guess it's a sense of humor thing then. So
possibly.
Yeah, because you've got quite a sort of cheeky and Like you say dumb things deliberately.
I'm just a bit of a silly person, I think. Yeah. I'm a bit of a silly person. And I guess that's another reason that I've enjoyed being at the org I am so much, because I can walk into the guild HQ around the corner and I step in the room and I could just be stupid. I could make stupid dances or say stupid things or just make stupid jokes. And I don't have that with everyone. And I think that's something that I value so much, because being around those people makes me feel so comfortable. And I have really close friends that I've met through streaming that, like, I could just say anything to them and I, like, it won't feel awkward. But there are definitely people that I do experience that with, and it's nothing to do with them as a person. It's just an instant, like, click or not click kind of thing. And it doesn't mean I don't like them. It's just like, I value being able to be myself so much. And that is something that comes with streaming. As soon as I start streaming, I can turn on my camera and say silly stuff. And it's just great, because it's like talking to a group of friends every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So it's not waiting to see if someone is compatible with you. You just sort of have people where you can kind of tell.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's just how that person acts towards me to begin with as well, you know? I don't know. Sometimes it's a gradual thing. It's definitely gradual sometimes, but like there'll be instances where I meet like a friend of a friend or something and you just instantly click with that person and you know that you can be yourself or be funny around them and they'll replicate that kind of humor.
Yeah, it kind of caught me off guard because of the fact that every time I've seen you, you've always been very comfortable.
Yeah.
But then that's because we met online.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had that pre-comfort thing from being online friends, which is an interesting thing that I think a lot of people who don't have online friends can't quite understand, is that you can meet up with someone online and you almost have a stronger connection with people who you've met online than people you meet through normal everyday life sometimes, because you spend so much time together online doing things that you mutually have found each other through. So you've already got that joint mindset, that joint hobby, whatever it is. So my best friends are all people I've met online because I found them in a much bigger area than just the people around the corner from me.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is interesting. It's almost ruined meeting people naturally for me, because I'm now like, I don't know if I like you because I've not spent 30
Maybe
hours with
you
online.
Just friends through proximity and that's it. But yeah. No, it's good. Online has opened so many doors for so many people, I feel like. And a lot of people used to say it was a very antisocial thing to be a gamer or to be online. But I think it's literally the most social thing you can do, meeting people from all over the world. I could travel to most countries and say that I know someone in that country now, which is incredible. And you learn so much about the world just streaming too. Like, you learn so much about other cultures and what matters to other people. And I think that's something that's so invaluable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I think if you're doing gaming right, it's sociable. I think there's some people who don't do it the right way to make it a sociable activity, but that's a whole different topic. There is one thing though, and it's been on show this whole podcast. If you're watching, if you're not watching, then maybe you'll see see a picture of it somewhere. But Harry, you've got a tattoo.
I do. It's my first ever tattoo. People always say it's so big for my first tattoo. Do you think it's a big tattoo?
I mean, it is a big tattoo.
It is a big tattoo.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I've always been one of those, my sister's just got tattoos recent and she's younger than me. So maybe I've got a bit of a complex and I was like, well, if you've got tattoos, I have to get some now. But I've always thought it's always something I've been very undecided about and always something I thought, you know what, I'll never get one because I can't decide what I want. And I think that's valid. You shouldn't just get something for the sake of it.
I feel very similarly to that.
Yeah. But the only reason I did get it, and I wasn't even specifically looking out to get one, I just saw Nikki Nyachu, she posted a picture of a tattoo that she got done. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, tell me the name of that artist right now, because I needed to know who did it. And she sent me the name of the artist and I booked this in like a couple months later. It was just kind of a design that she had. Also kind of inspired by Power from Chainsaw Man too, a little bit. I got her to make some details more like Power. But one of the situations where as soon as I saw the artist, I knew that I wanted it to be that artist. And then before that, I wasn't really that bothered. So maybe you'll just see one day and you'll be like, that's what I want. And perfect.
It's tough because I just don't think I'm a tattoo person.
You could be.
But then, so back when my team won the world championship, I made a tweet about 4 months before we won saying, if we win the world championship, I'll get a tattoo.
And you didn't hold up to your word.
And I never did.
Reagan.
And I came up with a design. I just didn't want it. And if that's something I don't want to get a tattoo over, then I don't think there's many events in life. So I'm never going to regret doing what I did there.
Yeah.
that's one of the most amazing moments in my life so far. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you were speaking to me about your tattoos, and there is no meaning.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It doesn't have to have a meaning. I'm a big artwork person. I try to do art in my spare time. Doesn't always go very well, but art is something that I've always loved, and I've always, you know, I have an iPad that I use and I draw sometimes, and I just really enjoy it. It's super therapeutic for me. But it was just something that I just really loved, the artwork. And I think I won't ever have a meaning to get a tattoo, to be honest. It just will be the artwork that I really enjoy and I really like. And don't get me wrong, the day after I got it, I woke up and I was like, did I make a massive mistake? Like, did I mess up? And then I kind of got used to it throughout the day. And I was like, you know what? I love it. It makes me look badass. And I really, really enjoy it. And I think when I have more, I'm going to look more badass. But for now, this is all I've got. And I really like it. Everyone really likes it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to have a meaning. You just like the artwork. But if you're not a huge art person, then maybe you won't. And that's fine too.
I mean, you don't need tattoos in life.
No, you don't.
If you want
not.
To have tattoos, exactly. Having tattoos is great. I think it's also, there's a different culture around it now. We grew up where having a tattoo meant you were a certain type of person, yes. And you couldn't do certain types of jobs. Mm-hmm. Whereas now you can be whatever you want to be and
it's
still do anything.
Thing about being online is you see so many incredible, like, there's people around you everywhere. Now you go on Instagram and you see everyone. You go on Twitter and you see everyone. And it's just like, I'll see so many people with sick tattoos now. And I'm like, well, if they have a tattoo, I can get one too. And no one's going to shun me for it. My mother, maybe. She doesn't really like the fact that I have tattoos, but who cares? Who cares?
I mean, yeah. I mean, live your own life. And
exactly.
As it starts to build out, might be seeing a bit of a sleeve, sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to get one here next, but we'll see.
But yeah, I don't think I'm going to be getting any tattoos anytime soon. Not for me, but... Tell me a little bit more about your gaming achievement. I forgot to ask this earlier on. I told you beforehand this is going to be a question.
Okay.
What is your greatest gaming achievement ever?
Do you mean like in a specific video game? Or can it... See, I'm a pretty bad gamer. I will say I'm not a great gamer. So in terms of things that I've actually achieved in a game... Oh, I guess... Oh, I don't know. See, I really love GeoGuessr. That's like one of my favorite games to play. And I guess I didn't mention that in my top five games, but that's because GeoGuessr to me is less of a game, more of a way of exploring the world from your room, which mm-hmm. is what I love to do. I have learned so, like when I tell you I was terrible at geography before, I thought when I was 15 years old doing my GCSEs, I thought Brazil was in Europe. I'm not even joking. And I tell this story all the time and people are like, that is so dumb. Like, how could you ever think that? But it's true. When I was 15, I was like, wait, Brazil's not in Europe. And I started playing GeoGuessr. My friend Sam, I'll shout him out, Mr. Swang, he introduced me to the game. I think he was playing it on his stream and he used to do a stream where he played it every single Friday. And I was like obsessed with it. I was like, wait, there's a game where you can explore the world and guess where you are. That sounds perfect. So I think GeoGuessr is an incredible game and it's taught me so much about geography to the point now where during COVID, I sat down and I learned every single US state. I taught myself to be able to place and name every single state of the US, which I thought was a big achievement for me, someone that thought Brazil was in Europe at the age of 15.
Mm. Most Americans couldn't even do that.
Literally, most Americans can't name every single state. So I think I wouldn't say that I've achieved like something incredible playing that game. Like I don't have a super good rank or anything like that playing GeoGuessr. But I think it's one of those games where I've put a lot of hours into it. And because of doing that, I've learned more about the world and about geography than I have ever learned from any lesson or any school, anything to do with school. So I would say that, yeah, just in general, learning like more about the world, I suppose, is my big achievement.
I think that's my favorite gaming achievement so far. Everyone's got very shallow, like 100% of this game or...
Oh, really?
The fact that you thought of... The knowledge I have gained through GeoGuessr. Yeah, I think that's quite a nice way to put it. I mean, I played a little bit of GeoGuessr, but I think it's one of those, the more you play it, the more enjoyable it gets because you start to recognize patterns and the satisfaction of recognizing somewhere instantly and being able to pinpoint it without being too much traveling.
It's just so impressive. Like there's a massive online community around GeoGuessr now and so many incredible players that are making such a spotlight for themselves. And a lot of people just think that it's so cool. And I just think it is incredibly cool. You know, my mum loves geography too. And I showed her GeoGuessr one day and this was like 2 or 3 years ago. And I've always said that it's one of those games where when you stop playing for a week, you forget a lot of stuff. And there are so many metas. It could be like a bridge on a specific road or the color of a sign or something like that that will tell you where you are. Number plates are a massive thing as well. And I'd love to go back to her in like 6 months, play a game of GeoGuessr and have her be astonished at what I've learned. Like, that's something I really want to do. But I think in general, just, I get my communities play GeoGuessr all the time. There's a game mode you can play where you have your chat also guess along with you.
Mm.
It's really fun. People love it. But I think the game is massively growing because it's become such a big thing on like TikTok and YouTube and everything now. And I'm excited for more people to get into GeoGuessr because I feel like it's just one of those games that's like, why not learn more about the world and see more of the world than you'll ever see, you know, without having to leave your house, which obviously, I mean, I hope I would get to one day. Yeah. I'd love to visit some of the places. Exactly. I want to do that one day. Yeah. But yeah, learning more about the world through GeoGuessr is my biggest achievement, I think.
I mean, that is poetic. I guess we're getting close to rounding out the show. I've never called it a show before.
This is my thank you, Gregan. I've made a show.
You've made a show of it. We always finish off with the same question,
okay,
which is, what does gaming mean to you?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
You'd be surprised how consistent the answers are. Very similar.
I'm probably going to say a very similar answer too. Let me think of something really profound. Gaming.
You said a lot of things throughout the podcast.
I've said a lot of profound things. Okay.
But just like what gaming has meant to you, kind of reference, you know, community, the enjoyment of playing the game, the things you've learned from it, as we just spoken about.
So I've learned so much. What gaming means to me, I think, as a woman, sometimes it's very difficult to talk about gaming because a lot of people still think in this day and age that women only play games for attention and things like that. So in the past, talking about gaming has been difficult. But I think what it's taught me is like the exact opposite of that. Like, there are so many incredible people out there that just love gaming for gaming. And it's a very social thing. Like, it didn't used to be a social thing, but it is now a very social thing. All of my close online friends I've met through gaming, as have you as well. So I think it's incredibly social. It's made me more confident. I've gained more knowledge on a lot of things because of gaming. It's just, honestly, just a really good pastime as well. It's just one of those things that, like, it's just a hobby, just like everything else is, you know? And it's really great to be able to share that hobby with other like-minded people. It's put me in some incredible communities and allowed me to do so many incredible things. Like, if it wasn't for gaming, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. And I wouldn't be, you know, in an org, be a streamer, be doing a podcast. This is my first ever podcast, by the way.
Oh, really?
I've never ever done a podcast before.
I didn't know that, but I...
Yeah, this is my first ever podcast. Uh-huh. I think it's just one of those things. It's just good to say you're a gamer sometimes. And whatever that means for you, it doesn't have to be competitive. It doesn't have to be an FPS game. It can be The Sims, it can be Stardew Valley, it can be GeoGuessr, you know. It's just what you enjoy spending your time doing. And if you enjoy that thing with other like-minded people, then that's even better. So puts you in a good spot, I think.
In summary, everything.
Everything, yeah. I didn't really answer that question very well, did I? I was like, what do you like about it? Everything, yeah.
I mean, it is everything in the sense that it's provided pretty much every part of your life a better avenue to success and enjoyment. Yeah. But
I'm 28 years old almost, and I've never had a career job. I've worked at Starbucks, I've worked at a cafe, and then I've streamed for the rest of my years up until now.
Mm.
And, you know, the fact that I've been able to live comfortably, like, having money is like a great thing, of course, and everyone will say that, but it doesn't make you happier. But one thing I've found is that, like, if it buys you freedom in life, then that's the best thing you can ask for. If it allows you to provide for people around you, if it allows you to, you know, take your friends out for dinner, take your friends out for drinks, take someone you love on a holiday, then I just think, like, I'm so lucky. I'm so incredibly lucky to do what I do for a job. And there are people out there who work 2-3 jobs, and I feel incredibly guilty when I think about that, because it's hard to feel like you have so much from a job that most people would dream about. It is hard work sometimes, balancing things and being your own boss is really, really difficult. But I would never say that it's hard work or that I'm unlucky in any sense. But just use it to do good and use it to help people and, you know, put things out there that matter. And even if it's just doing a silly stream and cheering someone up, like that's all you can really hope for. So,
yeah, I do want to just hone in. I haven't brought it up at all, really, this podcast, but you did mention it there when I asked you about what does gaming mean to you. You mentioned that being a woman in gaming, it's not normal to talk about gaming. Well, it wasn't normal to talk about gaming for a lot of your life, whereas now it's starting to become more normal. How often does that come up in your life, being a woman in gaming specifically? You know, are there drawbacks with that? I mean, just for example, you've had to hide your identity online.
Mm-hmm.
All these little things that I hadn't thought about until I started to connect with more women, and especially streamers in gaming. And I think I learned a lot about being a woman in gaming through you and your sister. When Sid started to introduce me to Valorant and the experience she had with Valorant, it opened my eyes a lot to a lot of those things. So yeah. I guess we'll take a little bit of time here to talk about that, because I think it is an important topic and one that I often forget about because it's so normal now.
Yeah.
From my point of view, to just be surrounded by women in the communities that we've formed. So yeah, talk about your experiences.
That, it's a good thing that it's become very normal for our, I mean, we would just never question it now, you know, like one of our female friends said she likes playing a game. I'd be like, awesome. What's it about? Let me find out. Whereas like, I guess outside of the whole online space, there's still that cliche that women, you don't actually like gaming. You're just like doing it for attention, or you're just doing it for the sake of it. And I think that comes with a lot. Think about how to word this. I think in my life, it's made me very insecure about a lot of things. Just in terms of feeling not as good as my male counterparts, which is another thing that's just really funny. I can't play competitive games against people in my community. I don't know if you've been there for some of the times that I've tried to do that. And I suppose maybe Among Us is one of those other things where I felt that inferiority. Because men are supposed to be so much better at gaming, and like gaming is like a man's thing. Like, I guess not as much now, but it still has that kind of label in some scenarios. Definitely, I feel such an inferiority complex when it comes to playing games against my male friends. Like in my Discord, we love to do like a 5v5 Overwatch. And if I'm not playing a support role in Overwatch, which is my main role, if I try and do something else, I just feel so incredibly inferior in every way. Like I can't be as good as my friend because I'm not a man. And if I was, then I wouldn't feel as bad about it as I feel because I'm a woman. So playing games against my friends is something that I've really struggled with over the years, especially my guy friends, because I do still always feel that like inferiority, that I can't be as good because being a woman limits me. And people will say like, oh yeah, well, men naturally have faster reaction times and things like that. And I guess that, and that might honestly be true. And that kind of like sticks in my mind, is like, oh, I can't be as good as my male friends because my reaction times being a woman means that I can never be that good. And that is really depressing. And that kind of like sticks with you a lot. And still people will say, oh, you're not going to be as good because you're a woman. In whatever game I play, luckily the games I play, I don't really ever receive too much hate for being a woman, you know. Like I can jump on comms on Overwatch and I don't think I've ever had anyone say, oh, you're a woman, shut up, and things like that. I know in other games it's rife and it's really, really bad. And honestly, people say, oh, mute them or whatever. But like, you shouldn't really have to. You shouldn't have to do that. Everyone is free to enjoy what they want to enjoy. But I think that's why I've kind of grown to like games like GeoGuessr, because I don't feel like that's something that my reaction time, for example, is going to limit me on. Like with GeoGuessr, all you're limited by is your memory. Like that's essentially it. So I feel like that's something I can be as good as someone else if I practice enough, because it's not down to physical attributes, it's down to your mind. And that, I suppose, gives me more hope. But it's incredibly difficult, and I still face a lot of insecurities, even though I, you know, I'm not a great gamer as it is. There are some things I'm better at, but definitely still has a big cloud of insecurity over it for me. And I think that's probably going to stay for the rest of my life. No matter how good I get at something, it's still going to be incredibly difficult. And I think we're still going to face a lot of issues for a while until hopefully we see more like female teams and things like that. And just, there's already such a big female presence in gaming as it is. And I think with Twitch and stuff, it's becoming a lot better. People have starting to understand, you know, oh, women can like video games as well, you know, just because it has a reputation of being like shooter games or FPS. Women can love shooter games and FPS too. Like, it's just the same.
Has your perception of the biological disadvantage changed now you're seeing women be better at games and have those successful opportunities?
Definitely. I think now I'm like, okay, it's not biological. Like, there will be women that are better than men at gaming, and that's just how it is. But I think because we still have such a massive male presence, like dominating the, you know, the professional scene, I think that's still something that a lot of people hold on to, is, oh, there's a bigger male presence in this, that must mean that the men are better. Which is really sad to see, honestly. And it's not a case of the fact that that's true. I think there's just so much less representation for women. So there are going to be thousands of unknown female professionals out there that can make their way into the scene, but we just don't have the discoverability for it yet, I don't think. We're not having as many people reach out to these professional female players and try to put them on a team because those teams just don't exist yet. So I really hope that changes in the next like 5 years and we see equal amount of female teams as we do male teams, because I think that's the only thing that's really going to start making a massive difference, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to give a little anecdote to help sort of add to that point. So you didn't mention about the sort of societal challenges that are faced, whereby a lot of women are put off gaming or have to face more discrimination, whatever it is, throughout their development. So therefore, they're less likely to develop as fast as men because they're constantly getting hit with barriers along the way. And because of that, there's less women like yourself who've played games their whole life.
Yeah.
You know, typically it'll be through having a male influence in the family. For you, it was your dad. A lot of people have older brothers or whatever who'll introduce them to gaming, and that'll be why they've gamed their whole life. So just because of that, there's a less of a population of people who are doing that. But with the lockdown period, a lot of people got into gaming who otherwise wouldn't have. And a friend of mine got into gaming through Among Us, around the Among Us era. And then off the back of that, their friends are like, hey, come play Valorant with us. They'd never played a shooter before. And now they are, and have been within like the first year of them playing, got to Ascendant rank.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is crazy for someone who's never played a shooter before, never played a competitive game before. Like when I went over to Valorant, I've barely scratched Ascendant. And I'm a hardcore gamer who went and did, learned lineups, went and did like tutorial training, all that kind of stuff. So I do wonder how many people out there had the potential to be at the same level as
so many
pro players, but have just not had that ability to do it along the way.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like, that's exactly what I was saying, is like, just because we haven't found out about those people yet doesn't mean that they don't exist, you know, just because, you know, there is definitely a female equivalent to Tens or someone, you know, out there playing on their PC, and they just don't have the reach yet. They don't have a way of getting discovered like a lot of male teams do. And like you were saying about, I grew up having been taught by my dad how to game. A lot of people, because of like TikTok, YouTube and things like that, loads of women are now getting into gaming just because it's something that they've seen online, or something that they know they can do, and something, oh, their friend is doing it, so let me try it out as well. And I think through that, like, I think now that there's so many, especially with Valorant as well, I think that's a massive, massive game that kind of blew up on TikTok and now is just so, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if the ratio of people that play Valorant is like 50-50.
Could be.
Because it has a different reach now. Gaming has a much different reach with online platforms, and not everyone's getting taught by their brother or their dad now. It's like you're getting taught by YouTube, by TikTok, by your friends. So I think if we continue on that path, then there's definitely going to be more discoverability for female pros, or just more female gamers in general, which is really exciting, to be honest.
It will vary region by region as well, because the cultural difference across the whole world is it's very different. And I know we have quite a lot of Middle Eastern presence in Rocket League, and I know A few of the orgs there are starting to get women involved in gaming in the Middle East, which of course is a whole different culture out there for women in gaming. And so, yeah, across the world, more women get involved in gaming through watching people like yourself on stream. I know there'll be many women out there who have seen you streaming a game like Overwatch and thought, oh, I can do that too now. So as time goes on, it'll only get better and better. But that was a little bit of a tangent at the end. Normally we just end with what does gaming to you, but I thought it was really bonus important content. To bring it up. So thank you very much for sharing everything you shared about your community, about some of the challenges you faced it, and also the experiences you gained through all the work that you've done. I guess I the only thing I can say is thank you for coming
thank
on.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. My first ever podcast.
I'm glad this could be your first ever podcast. Quite a deep one to go in on.
Oh, it's fine. I love that though. That's why I like talking. I love talking. I love like just chatting in my streams to do that, because, you know, it's just so easy to go off on a tangent and talk with people from around the world and hear their views about things. And yeah, maybe it'll make it onto a podcast. Who knows? So thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
Well, thank you, Harry. Sports Social
Podcast Network. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.